Todd Harrison, Senior Fellow for Defense Budget Studies at the Center for Strategic and Budgetary Assessments, writing Rethinking Readiness. And the readiness word has been used just very extensively in the past 2 years, especially, Todd, as we've started to talk about contracting defense budgets. And the question has always been, ready for what? You're adding a couple of other questions to the mix and proposing different maybe answers to those questions than we've discussed before, Todd. What are those questions that you're introducing? We'll start there. Thank you for joining me today.
Sure. I think we got to go back to, I love Richard Betts's classic book on military readiness, and he asked the question, well, you know, ready for what? What types of wars must the military be ready to fight? What adversaries, what capabilities would they have under what conditions? But then he also says we've got to ask readiness for when. There's a time element to readiness of how quickly must our military be prepared to fight? What kind of warning are we going to assume we'll have? And Betts's third question is readiness of what? Which parts of the force must be ready for which types of threats and over what timelines? But, you know, I set those aside and say those are all matters of strategy, because readiness is really a strategic choice. And what it means for a force to be ready can really only be understood in the context of one strategy. And so, you know, we have a 2012 Defense Strategic Guidance right now. I don't know that it does the best job of defining this, but that's what we have to rely on to tell us what it is we expect our military to be able to do. Then we can start to understand, are we able to do that? And what I get to in this report is the next logical question. Once we figured out ready for what, ready for when, readiness of what, the next question then becomes how. How do we allocate resources in our defense budget most effectively to achieve the type of readiness that is required by our strategy? And that's a hard question to answer.
It is very difficult, because it's right at the crux of where the Defense Department has been, not just in the Obama administration, but also at the tail end of the Bush administration, when we first understood that economic pressures were going to drive defense budgets and the sizes of the top lines, at least, for the foreseeable future. The accusation from one side against the other, and we saw it go both ways, that budget pressures are driving strategy is one of the greatest insults that one side can toss at the other, it seems, Todd.
Right. And in reality, you know, budget and strategy are locked in a never-ending cycle. And if you develop a strategy without any regard for the budget constraints you face, that'll be a strategy you can't execute. You'll be calling for a level of readiness in your forces you will not be able to achieve, and you will have a hollow force. At the same time, your budget should be developed with your strategy in mind. A budget that's not developed with a strategy in mind is just spending money blindly. So you've got to have this constant iteration between strategy and budget. And the key thing to understand right now is, you know, the budget, you know, all parts of the budget in one way or another relate to readiness, whether it's funding people or funding maintenance or funding the acquisition of equipment. It all goes towards generating ready forces one way or the other. And we've got a delicate balance of inputs in all of those areas that have been tested and tried through war and in peacetime over decades. But we're being pushed out of that balance, whether we like it or not, by sequestration and, quite frankly, by interference in Congress and not allowing DOD to conduct some of the management reforms and changes in force structure that it would want. So we're at a point right now where we're being knocked out of balance in terms of our readiness inputs. But, you know, we've got to find a way to overcome that. And I think one of the shortfalls right now is we don't have good readiness metrics for the military.
You propose that we are maybe even looking at it, though, the wrong way by looking almost exclusively at inputs and not focusing on the outputs, what it is we want to happen, what it is we want to be able to accomplish.
That's right. And so I use a baseball analogy throughout the report. I look at, you know, if people have seen the movie Moneyball or read the Michael Lewis book, Moneyball. I think we basically need a Moneyball approach to readiness in the military. And I say that because, you know, what happened, you know, the Oakland A's led by General Manager Billy Bean, they knew they we're not going to have the resources of wealthier teams like the Yankees. So they went about to scientifically rethink baseball. And what they did, first of all, they developed new metrics, what have become known as sabermetrics in baseball, for how they evaluate players, the value of them. And the second thing they did is they gained a better understanding of how the inputs, and for a baseball team, it's the team roster and how they're paying people, how can that be optimized to achieve the desired output, winning games? Well, you know, what they found, and I think this is true in defense as well, is the way you spend your money, the way you allocate resources, matters as much as, if not more, than how much money you have. So that's why I think we've got to start, you know, like Billy Beane did in baseball, we've got to start with readiness metrics that focus on the relevant outputs. And I think the outputs we've got to be measuring should be driven by strategy. And we already, from our strategy, we break that down into roles and missions, and we break those down by unit in the military. They have what they call mission essential task lists that define what each unit is supposed to be able to do to support the strategy. And we just need to be testing the performance of units on those mission essential tasks. And in many cases, we're already testing them. We're getting that data, but that's not what we're reporting as readiness metrics. And that's how I think we need to shift the mindset about readiness in the military.
Todd Harrison of the Center for Strategic and Budgetary Assessments, writing Rethinking Readiness in the latest edition of Strategic Studies Quarterly. The Moneyball thing is appealing to me for many reasons. I'm a baseball fan, first off, and I hate the Yankees, second off. So the idea of anybody trying to beat them is terrific to me. But what Beane got at and what you're getting at here is not what everybody thinks they're getting at. A lot of people look at the book or watch the movie and think that there is a set, static group of pieces of information that the A's looked for. And that wasn't the case. It changed year after year after year and still changes. The teams that still pursue that strategy changes year after year after year. And you nailed it both in the conversation here and in the piece that you're writing. The key is not any one cohort of data. The key is looking for inefficiencies and exploiting them to your benefit, right?
Exactly. You know, I think the subtitle to the book, Moneyball, is, you know, winning in an unfair game. Well, you know, warfare is unfair, and we never want to fight a fair war. We always want an unfair advantage, and that's what we need to be looking for in readiness, is we've got to find, you know, where are the sweet spots where we can put some more money and have get a big bang for our buck, and where are the things, the types of readiness inputs that we're funding now that we may not be getting much out of. And I use a case study in there that I found from one of my colleagues here at CSBA, John Stillian. He'd done this work when he was at RAND as a graduate student, looking at a case study of a fighter squadron. And what he found, there was a natural experiment in this fighter squadron where they had a gap in training. And what he found is that when it comes to air-to-air combat, that what seem to matter most is not the total, you know, the experience of the pilot or total flying hours. What mattered was recent practice in air-to-air combat, recent as in within the past 10 days. And I think if we have good metrics like that, instead of using metrics for inputs like flying hours, if we use metrics like, you know, air-to-air missile hit rates or average bomb miss distance, if we actually focus on the outputs, we might discover that there are some nonlinear and unexpected relationships between the inputs and outputs that we can exploit to our advantage.
And that correlates with the Moneyball example, because what Billy Beane and his colleagues did was they understood that the output they wanted was winning games. How do you do that? You score more runs than the other team. How do you deconstruct the scoring of the runs on your team's part and the prevention of scoring of runs on the other team's part? And that led to the elements of run scoring, run prevention, that they then discovered the inefficiencies in and exploited those inefficiencies. And that sounds like where you're headed here.
It is, and it's a never-ending process, because it starts with readiness output metrics, performance metrics, and then that then gives you data, and you can identify correlations and start to develop theories about what matters and what doesn't. But then you've got to feed those theories. You've got to use those theories to produce testable hypotheses. Then you go out and run controlled experiments and see if you're right before you apply this to the whole force, because this is a risk. risky business we're in. So you conduct those experiments, you get more data, then that feeds back into refining your theories and models, producing more testable hypotheses, and you continue this cycle of experimentation and learning and refining as you go to get more and more efficient. The other thing is you've got to have a continuous feedback loop like that in the military, because the military is not static. It's dynamic. It's constantly changing. New technologies are coming in. The way we fight, new operational concepts are always coming in. And so we've got to have a readiness resourcing system that is continuously updating to the fact that warfare is changing.
Well, and another element that, if I may say so, you might have left out there is a new threat landscape that's continually evolving. And what is an inefficiency today, may not necessarily be one 2 years from now, or may not be as large a priority to solve as an inefficiency as it is today.
That's right. And so, you know, the nature of warfare is constantly evolving, and what we're asking our troops to do is constantly changing. So, you know, why do we have static readiness measures that are input-based? And, you know, you look at some of these things, and the way that we figure out how much money we need to put in training is driven by, well, we have these training standards, and we need so many hours of doing this and so many hours of doing that. And those things, they aren't keeping pace with the reality of the world, and we don't have good links between, you know, what we do in training to the actual output, the actual performance of forces. In some cases, we have correlations. That's where, you know, we've had natural experiments or we've looked at historical data. But one of the key points I make in the paper is in natural experiments and historical data, they only give you correlations. Correlations do not prove causality. You've got to run controlled experiments if you want to prove a causal relationship, knowing that a change in the input causes this change in the output. The only way you're going to do that is with a controlled experiment, and I think that's really lacking in DoD right now.
Todd, who has to do what to reach the end result that you're proposing in this piece?
Well, it's got to start with DoD, and they've got to develop and give to Congress these readiness output measures that I'm talking about. And I think that it's not that much work for them. I think, you know, we've got these mission essential task lists. Units are already training to their mission essential task. They're scoring already in the training. We just need to, you know, wrap that up and pull that up at a higher level so that DoD can start reporting that to Congress. Then I think the burden falls on Congress is they set in law what the readiness reporting requirements are for the military. And if you look at that, there's about 28 different items that Congress specifies the DoD must report on. They're all input measures or some aggregation of input measures. The Congress then needs to go back and amend that section of the law and require DoD to start reporting readiness in terms of outputs rather than inputs. But then it then goes back and it falls on the individual services to develop this experimental approach to continuously test and refine their theories of readiness and how inputs relate to outputs. The services have to do that. That is their job to recruit, train, and equip. And so, you know, we've got to develop this experimental culture and experimental process within the readiness branches of each of the services.